David, thanks so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate your time.
Yes, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for the great introduction. Great to be here to share with your community.
Thanks, bud. Well, just to maybe give a little bit of context, that was quite a bio, and I really enjoyed reading your book and going through the full story, but maybe you can give us some of the Cliff Note highlights and kind of how you led to where you are today and what you've been up to most recently.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe the journey I've been on is a journey of three worlds. The first world was the world of not enough. Grew up, like so many people, with nothing. Single mom, worked two jobs, one as a second grade teacher, packed our dinners in a paper bag, drove us around Akron, Ohio in a country squire station wagon, filling up turnstiles at convenience stores with greeting cards just so we could eat. So for me, although my mom's objective was doctor, lawyer, or failure, my objective was rich. And all I wanted to do was be rich for the sake of buying my mom a house and creating financial stability for my family where we've never had it before. My dream of being rich originally was to be a professional football player. That ended in college very quickly when I got ran over by Christian Okoye, the Nigerian nightmare. I remember lying on my back thinking doctor, lawyer, or failure. Ended up realizing doctors had to be in hospitals. So I went to law school specifically, intentionally, to make a lot of money. I went to Tulane Law School, where they have the best maritime oil and gas program, because oil and gas litigators made the most money out of law school.
Interesting.
I got in 1992 a fantastic job offer as an oil and gas litigator for 150 grand plus bonus, but I didn't take it, despite my mom telling me that the internet was a fad, despite Justice Scalia telling me nobody would ever do research in computers. You needed books. I decided to sell legal research online in 1992. By 1993, I made my first $1 million. 95, we exited for $3.4 billion. Which changed my trajectory. It also changed my perspective of life. Instead of living in this world of not enough, where everything happened to me and everybody else had all the advantages, now I lived in this world, an optimistic world of everything happens for me. So I would, nothing goes wrong. I'm Midas. Everything I touch is turned to gold. And I started to lose the values that my mom had taught me, those ones that you talked about, the gratitude, the forgiveness, the accountability, the inspiration that's created by effectively communicating. I lost my faith. And although my life went extremely well for the next 15 years, where, as you mentioned, I ran the most notable sports agency in the world. I was CEO of Samsung's first convergence device, later known as a Windows device, but later known as smartphones. I ended up surrounding myself with the wrong people, the wrong ideas, and I ended up losing over $100 million while I had access to what billionaires couldn't afford to have access to: sidelines, award shows, all those great things. Thanks to my wife and my mom, when I hit rock bottom, when my basement had a basement, I found God and faith, and started to live in what I call a divine direction. And so I moved from the world of for me to a world of through me. So instead of everything happening for me and I'll be happy when I make my next million, I now was living my life not only with wisdom from losing everything and seeing and prioritizing what was important, but living a life of faith where, as my mom stated the day that I told her I lost everything, including her home, I knocked on her door and I'm like crying like a four-year-old. She could barely hear me. She's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Mom, I lost everything. I lost your home. You need to move." "Oh my God, are the kids okay? Is your wife, Julie, okay? Is that, Mom, I don't think you heard me. I lost everything. I lost your home. You need to move." "Oh, do you need some money?" I'm like, "Mom, I just literally said you lost your home. I need a lot of money." "Oh, well, what can I do for you, son?" I said, "Mom, why is God punishing me?" And she smirked at me. I'll never forget. Smirked at me and said, "Oh, God does not punish. He's not punishing you. He's protecting you. He's promoting you. He's loving you. He's perfecting you. It's time, son. You need to figure it out. You need to figure this out. I looked at her and I said, well, Mom, I don't believe in God. She said, oh, you believe in God. You just believe in the wrong God.
Mm.
So I started to live with those values again. I started practicing those values daily. I started to categorize things as, is this in my divine direction or is this interfering with it? Is the meaning of my past aligned with my divine direction? The failures, the setbacks, the mistakes, the drugs, the alcohol, the strip clubs, is that aligned with my meaning of my future, of my divine direction, or is it interfering with it? And slowly but surely, I started to dissipate and dissolve and disappear the dis-ease of my life. And here I am 20 years later, as you mentioned, chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute, chief chancellor of Junior Achievement, chairman of Unstoppable Foundation, making more money than I ever dreamed of for the sake of helping others and having fun. And I get to come on terrific shows to empower all of your community. In fact, before this thing's over, I got to make sure everybody in your community, I will literally sign my book, send it to you, pay for shipping, pay for the book. You got my emails right there, david@dmeltzer.com. So anyone in this community, I want to empower with the lessons, the dummy tax that I paid.
I love it. Well, I really enjoyed the book. So those of you who are at home, if you're seeing the show, you should definitely take David up on his offer. It's an amazing life story and has just a whole toolkit of not only tactical things that will help you out in your career as an entrepreneur and executive, but just like you said, a lot of foundational things that will just allow you to be a more peaceful and centered person. So I wonder if you would be willing to share a fun story from the days of working, you know, with Lee. I got to spend a little bit of time at his Lake Arrowhead house because one of his nephews was my fraternity brother.
At Berkeley?
Yeah. UC Santa Barbara.
UCSB, yep, right on. Yep.
Yeah, so I got to meet him a few times, and obviously the movie was legendary. But we also know, you know, kind of the end of the story wasn't as glamorous as the movie. And you've documented some of it in your biography. But would you maybe tell us a story from that time, and what was it, the biggest thing that you took away from that time of working with Lee?
Yeah, I would say as much as Lee is public about being an alcoholic and suffering from a horrible dis-ease of alcoholism, the man is a true mentor to so many. He's one of the smartest people and most generous and kind people I've ever met. And if it wasn't for the dis-ease, he'd probably be president of the United States, or at least governor or senator of California, no doubt in my mind. I've never met anyone so smart or so kind. But unfortunately, he has a disease. And my favorite story was actually, and Lee wasn't there. And he had hired me initially, not because I was a great sports agent or a great lawyer, but really because I had an extraordinary background in venture capital and technology. And he saw in the early 2000s, the future of sports and venture and technology. Just to show you what a genius he was, he's absolutely correct. If you know anything about sports, today, sports is all about venture capital and technology more than anything else. And so he hired me for the right reason to be CEO. And he also knew he was negotiating. He was the president, when you knew him, of the Save the Rams organization to save the Rams from leaving Los Angeles. He wanted to bring them back. Giorgio Frontieri owned the team at the time. And so we were working hard with, you know, John Shaw and others to bring it back. And I had rounded up about $900 million from Franklin Financial to buy the Rams and move them back to LA. And this is pre the Kroenke deal, obviously much earlier. But anyway, I'm waiting for Lee for like literally the biggest call of my life, right? And Lee gets arrested for public intoxication. He fell down the hill walking back from the liquor store or something, and he's lying there drunk on the sidewalk. Anyway, so I'm dealing like with a lot of shit, right? Brand new job. So I called Jeff Morad, who had just been negotiating to buy the Padres. He was who I took the job from. He had been the CEO and moved to the Diamondbacks and then buying the Padres. Extremely successful entrepreneur. And I was like, dude, what am I supposed to do? He's like, call Lee. I'm like, what do you mean call Lee? He's like literally in detox. He goes, I don't care. Lee Steinberg drunk is better than all of us sober. Just call him. So I call Lee and I'm like, man, I got this call tomorrow morning. I've learned, you know, I'm living a more humble life, Lee. I'm over my skis, man. I need your help. And he says the most wise statement, which ended up to be part of the title of my book behind me. He said, Dave, always be fair. Don't negotiate to the last penny and don't do business with dicks. And he hung up. And I went through it and just was fair and in my negotiation, abundant. And in the end, walked away from the deal because I knew the people involved in the deal weren't good people. They weren't the right buyers for Georgia or the Rams, or was I certain they would bring them back to LA, even though it would have been a huge feather in my cap in my first week to close a $900 million purchase of the Rams and moving them back. It probably would have been the biggest black eye that Lee and I would have suffered because of the people that were involved and what I later found out where the money was from and all types of other things. So Lee guided me and protected and promoted me as well. So kudos to Lee Steinberg as always, but that is one of my favorite stories about negotiations, about my job. I have a lot of great stories about athletes. You know, Ray, real quick, Ray Lewis, man.
Yeah, let's go.
I was with Ray and sitting in his house by his fireplace. And I said, Ray, I go, you're amazing. I go, you weren't the strongest linebacker, the fastest linebacker. And I couldn't believe I said it. I go, or really the smartest linebacker. And I go, but in my opinion, you're probably the greatest linebacker ever to play. And he grabs my leg. And I literally, I humbly will tell everyone, I think I peed a little. I was fucking terrified. I was terrified. That man, he has a big head. And he leans into me and he looks at me and he said, you think I was the greatest? I go, me and many others. He goes, let me tell you why. He goes, because when I stepped on the field, David, I was willing to die. And I literally knew he meant it. And that was when I realized the common denominator of all successful people is a desire that you must be what you can be. And Ray Lewis epitomized that every time he stepped on the field because he was willing to give his life. Even when he had a broken shoulder or a broken hand, he was willing to give everything. He had a desire that he must be what he can be, which outperformed everyone else that ran faster, was stronger and smarter than Ray Lewis.
Yeah, sometimes it's just that ability to step into pain, like you said, you know, playing while injured or playing through some of those things, just the fortitude to not give up under any circumstances.
Yeah, I took that in the business world, and somebody gave me a huge compliment the other day. They said, when I look up persistence in the dictionary, I see your picture. And I said, you could not have given me a bigger compliment other than when I look up the word kindness, I see your picture. That'd be the only thing I'd like on top of persistence.
That's awesome. So we mentioned in your bio, you know, you're chairman of the Napoleon Hill Institute. You know, Napoleon Hill is famous for one of the very earliest, you know, call, if you want to call it self-help genre, the Think Rich book. Be curious, how'd you get involved in that organization? And what do you take away from that timeless piece of, you know, human inspiration, you know, kind of the beginning of the genre almost of personal development and self-help?
Yeah, I think he is the seminal personal thought and personal development leader of all time. If you look at the greatest ones that exist today, everyone through history has learned from Napoleon Hill and Think and Grow Rich, by the way. And I'm no exception to that rule. I used to tell people in my 20s, every time that I read Think and Grow Rich, I make another $1 million. And I meant it. And later on in life, I licensed the ability to do Think and Grow Rich, the Legacy, the book, Think and Grow Rich, Legacy, the movie. Big supporter of the Think and Grow Rich Foundation. When the opportunity to become chairman came forward, I put my name in the ring. I had based that book, Connected to Goodness, that you read off of Think and Grow Rich. So I'm one of the disciples of Napoleon Hill. But here's the irony of Napoleon Hill beyond being chairman. is my favorite book of all time was written by Napoleon Hill. And the book that had the most impact on my life is lesser known. It actually was written in 1938.
Huh.
But nobody published it because they were afraid to publish it because he was so far ahead of his time. And in 2011, Napoleon Hill Foundation published a book called Outwitting the Devil.
Huh.
And it is a masterpiece of mindset, heartset, and handset. It is Napoleon Hill himself interviewing negative energy, negative thoughts, negative actions, negative words. And he, you know, really devoids the human perspective of the devil. It's really, nobody has a long tail and two pointy ears, but this book will rock your world. I will guarantee anyone that reads Outwitting the Devil, I've recommended it to literally hundreds of thousands of people, and I haven't had one person come back and say, oh, dude, that book sucks. It is amazing.
That's awesome. I'm going to check that out for sure. I wanted to come back to a comment you made about why you were hired originally as the CEO of Steinberg. You know, this idea that you were kind of early to this idea of sports and venture capital, and which you totally were. I mean, really a pioneer of it. But now sports and venture and media properties and kind of looking at athletes as this multidimensional kind of spoken wheel where you've got investments and a production company and a social media business and a portfolio of consumer brands and investments that they're doing on top of, you know, what they do on the field. Can you kind of talk about that evolution of athlete as, you know, just an athlete to entrepreneur, venture capitalist, investor, and what makes the ones that become successful and are the household names that we know? And what are some of the pitfalls of the ones that don't do it well?
Yeah, I think the main distinction of those that do it well and those that don't are the ones who ask for help and those who try to do it on their own. So like KD, right? Look at Kevin partners with Rich and those guys, Rich Kleiman, right? Because Rich Kleiman understands venture. Warren Moon partnered with me because I understood venture. And so the ones that are successful know that they've always had a coach, a mentor, and a teacher at all times. Tiger Woods has a coach. And, you know, we need mentors, people who sit in the situation that you want to be in to give us directions. We need teachers to teach us those directions, and we need coaches to bring the best out of us. And so there's only one distinction between the successful athlete in business and venture and the unsuccessful athlete. It's the ones who ask for help and they're
that.
Humble. And so I spend the majority of my time helping both veterans and athletes, because I don't have to teach them the desire that they must be what they can be. So that's the ingredient of success, the common denominator. I just have to tell them the dummy tax that I paid and teach them not to make the same stupid mistakes that I've made. And they go. So I work with a lot of big time athletes and veterans to expand the skills, knowledge, and desire that they have, especially today, because as AI comes out, you'll find, you know, it really creates a distinction in value between knowledge and wisdom. And so AI gives us all great knowledge. I mean, shit, man, just put something in there right now. It's absolutely incredible, the knowledge you have access to. But it doesn't give you wisdom, doesn't pay the dummy tax. And the dummy tax is the most expensive tax you'll ever confront. It'll take away everything you've ever earned and everything you will earn. And so for me, I think that those people today that are relying on the knowledge are in big trouble. You will be replaced because AI's knowledge power is almost infinite, where those that are seeking wisdom, those that are utilizing knowing who it is that sits in the situation they want to be in, wisdom is going to become an extremely valuable asset. And so although some people think that this technology game is a young person's game, I disagree. I think it's made knowledge ubiquitous, that everyone from a 5-year-old to a 100-year-old has extraordinary knowledge now, unbelievable knowledge. So those who have wisdom, those who have paid the dummy tax, are going to be exceptionally paid. And so in whatever age, whatever age you have wisdom. So just a key distinction that I find with athletes and with United States vets, that they're ones that are successful, seek the wisdom from the people that are already there. And those that aren't, try to do it alone.
I love that. You know, another thing that you've kind of highlighted is this idea of relational capital, but also the idea of like getting access to things that money can't buy. You know, Super Bowl, the Pro Hall of Fame, the Masters. These are like iconic moments that, yes, you know, if you have enough money, you can go to those things. It's going to cost you a lot of money. But getting access to the parties and get the experience. There are parts of those moments that are like, you know, my friend spent $20,000 to go to the Super Bowl last year. I think I had more fun going to the satellite events, and I didn't even get to go to the Super Bowl, but I got to have a better experience because I was, you know, in all these VIP events in and around the Super Bowl. Be curious, you know, your take on kind of, you know, how to cultivate your network so you can have those moments for yourself and be in those rooms, but also being able to offer them as currency to your network.
Yeah, I think you nailed the business model. So there's three things I've always valued in my business. One is what you were mentioning, experiential. It's a much more valuable experience going to intimate parties and the VIP sections of those intimate parties than it is sitting on the 30-yard line of a boring Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Of two teams that you may not even care about. you know, there may be some value in a picture, but that's all you really experience. You know, the halftime show's way better on TV. I can go through a list experientially. Yep. That's why I sell my Super Bowl tickets every single year. Unless the Los Angeles Chargers ever make the Super Bowl, it's going to cost me a fortune because I promised all my kids, my wife and family that I would take them to the Super Bowl. And despite what people think, I don't get my tickets for free. You know, I usually have to pay at least face value to get them. So, so experiential is one. Two is business development. Mm. So I evaluate what experiences I want, determinative upon the business development that I can have. So it could be bringing somebody or somebody's kid to the Masters and taking them back to the cabins with Curtis Strange. That has great business development value. Yeah. You know, helping kids, internships, things like that. Now, the third one, I was early to the game on, and people are picking up on it today, post-production content. So for me, I capture all these experiences, I capture all my business development, and then I utilize it, modify it, amplify it, and perpetuate it to build a community of like-minded, like-hearted people, because it holds a frequency. And now, you know, even on my speeches, right, I joke around, I'm like, because I get really big stages now. But when I started my first year, you know, 13 years ago, you know, I spoke in front of two people once, and one of them was my wife. One of them was my wife telling me that she's not going to spend a dime of our money anymore to build my brand because I was an idiot. But what she didn't know is that if I captured the best moments on that stage, even though there was her and one other person at this speech, I had an opportunity. My biggest video has 53 million views.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, yeah,
53 million views is a lot of effing people.
Yeah, you can talk to 53 million people one-on-one in your life.
No, or would they pay attention?
You probably would never speak to 53 million people from stages if you tried.
Dylan, I'll tell you right now, my team gets mad when there's like 40,000 views, right? And and I'm like, just so you know, if the Padres called right now and said, Dave, we're going to give you 3 minutes on the mound before the game in front of 40,000 people, even though I knew nobody would listen to me, I would get in my car right now, go and cancel everything to be on the mound at Padres Stadium, even though no one's. So don't tell me it's not important that 40,000 people are watching me for 3 minutes.
I love it. Well, Dave, we're coming up on the end of the time. I know you've got a busy day today. I want to give you an opportunity to do your plug. So what's going on in the world? Where can we follow you? Where can we support you these days?
I appreciate that. Please email me directly. David is, means beloved. At D is my first initial. Meltzer means servant. So let me be your beloved servant. David at dmeltzer.com. Books, guides, exercises, invites to the parties that you mentioned. We have the MLB All-Star Game coming up. We have Fanatics Fest. We have, I got Messi down FC Miami. We're going to the UK for a private member club. Masterminds in Newport Beach with people like Marie Diamond, Tim Story, Jay Abraham, the legend. So if you want to be invited or informed, just email me, David at dmeltzer.com. I'll sign a book, send it to you, pay for shipping. And let's do this again. Let's have you on some of my shows and get together in person as well. And I'll tell Lee that I got to meet you.
I love it. Thanks, David. Well, appreciate everything you do for your community and appreciate you spending some time with mine. Good luck in Japan this week, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it, man.